Rich just got a little richer in the NFL. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, with all guests joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. And that's exactly where we turn now. Our friend Sal Palantonio, ESPN NFL reporter, joins us. And Sal, you were in Philadelphia last night where Zach Ertz contributed to his now former team in the Philadelphia Eagles. The big news out of today is that Zach Ertz has been traded to the Arizona Cardinals. What do you make of this trade overall?
Well, I'm super happy for Zach Ertz and his family. You know, this is a great spot for him. Arizona and Kyle Kingsbury, Cliff Kingsbury are doing a tremendous job with that offense. We feature it every week on the NFL Matchup Show. You know, and to me, Kyler Murray, and you look at Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert and Tom Brady, Kyler Murray is making a definitive statement that he is the MVP of the National Football League. So I think that Zach Ertz is a perfect fit for Kingsbury's offense. He'll be great in the red zone for them. And this is a team that's definitely ascending without question. They look like they're definitely headed for the playoffs. And he gets to, you know, get a second life in the National Football League. But I'm obviously sad because he was beloved in Philadelphia. For me personally, covering Super Bowl 52, writing the book Philly Special, he was instrumental in helping me write that book, and he was instrumental in helping write the history of championship football in Philadelphia. So he's beloved. People are really saddened to see him go. But it's the right move for the Eagles in the end. And it's definitely the right move for Zach Ertz, and I wish him all the luck in the world.
Sal, you were at the game last night. Philadelphia comes up just short. One of the talking points this morning is the 15-yard taunting penalty on Jannard Avery late in the game that extended the Buccaneers' drive 15 yards. What was the reaction amongst the team after the game regarding that penalty?
You know, severe disappointment, right, that happened. It starts with Avery, and it obviously extends all the way to the coaching staff. You know, you look at it objectively, the Eagles were, you know, climbing back into it despite everything that had gone on offensively in the first half. And if they don't get that penalty, I got to think the Bucs have to punt and give the ball back to the Eagles, right? So, it was really a bad penalty at just about the worst possible time. And then Brady, of course, you know, pulled a rabbit out of his hat on that final drive, especially that rollout pass on third down to AB, to Antonio Brown. It was his first rollout of the game, and he connected, and it was his third read on that pass play. And to do it at that time of day at 44 years old on the road with a bad thumb, that was pretty amazing to see.
ESPN NFL reporter Sal Palantonio joining us. You mentioned the Eagles were clawing their way back in that one. That had everything to do with Jalen Hurts. But what do you make, Sal, of how the Eagles have been using Jalen? Do you think they're putting too much on Jalen Hurts? Has he been progressing?
Those are a lot of different questions, so let's take them one at a time. You know, the thing that has impressed me about Jalen Hurts and impressed everybody on the team is that if he has bad plays, which he had, against Carolina and against the Bucs in the first half, he's willing and able to put those aside and, you know, put together good play after good play in the second half, have a short memory, and rally the team to put them in a position to win. Now, they beat Carolina because they were playing Sam Darnold and he was throwing a lot of interceptions, three in the game. They didn't beat Tampa because they were playing the best quarterback of all time and still managed to lose by only 6 points and had a backdoor cover, by the way, in that game. So, Hurts has an incredible resiliency, but he's a work in progress. There's no question about it. You know, we study him on the Matchup Show, and you can just see he's too quick to evacuate the pocket. He's too quick to look at the rush. They're not utilizing the running game properly. I said last night, and I really mean this, I hope that Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator, look at themselves with a critical eye in the next 5 to 6 days and say, what is our offense? What's the definition of our offense? What are we going to do going forward? And I hope that they put the ball in the hands of Miles Sanders more. He's their most experienced and has proven to be their most productive offensive player. So help Jalen Hurts out. Run the ball, especially early in the game. They only had one handoff to Miles Sanders in the first half. It's unconscionable. You can't beat Tom Brady. You can't beat anybody that way, right? I mean, you had an opportunity in that game if you ran the ball to maybe keep Brady on the bench, but they didn't do it.
Sal, you're going to be on location for the Ravens-Chargers matchup this weekend. Huge matchup between two guys who have great odds to win the MVP award in Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert. I want to start with this. What do I make of this Ravens team? Because you could make the case they should be 5-0, having beaten or should have beaten the Raiders in week one, but you could also make the case that they could be 1-4. Justin Tucker bails them out, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumble in week two, and then the massive comeback on Monday night against the Colts. How good is this Ravens team?
Right, so you're absolutely right. Your analysis is totally correct. And I think you have to take it on both sides of the ball. First and foremost, Lamar Jackson, from the pocket, is a different player because his offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, has schemed up intermediate and deep throws that just weren't there. Part of it is out of necessity. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and that's what's happened. They have not had a good running game because they've lost like 900 running backs to injury, right? Their running back situation's in tatters, totally. So Lamar Jackson has learned to throw from the pocket to Andrews in the underneath routes, to Marquise Brown deep. Now this week they will face Derwin James, who's one of the best strong safeties in the National Football League. And he's very good. He has multi-dimensional skills. He's super tough and super smart, and it's going to be very difficult for them to, I think, do the kinds of things offensively. So on defense, they must play much, much better. You look at that game against the Colts, objectively, Carson Wentz had a superb night. Their defense has relied, maybe over-relied on the blitz. They've had some injuries. They're shorthanded. If they didn't have that Patrick Queen in the middle, oh my gosh. I mean, he's the second coming of Ray Lewis when you watch him on tape. You know, sideline to sideline thumper who can, you know, also rush the passer. He does it all. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. As for the Chargers, you know, boy, Justin Herbert, again, you know, we're looking at so many young quarterbacks, but you can make the case that Justin Herbert is the MVP going forward. Of his, if you take him out of that Chargers team, you're looking at a team that's maybe got two wins. He's been amazing, and the thing that he's really good at is the deep ball. You know, did you hear Steve Young talking about him on Countdown 2 weeks ago when they were on Monday Night Football? And Steve Young talked about the fact that, you know, arm strength comes from shoulder and elbow and hips and the torque in your body. But your hands are what provide the accuracy. And there are very few players in the game of professional football who have had the accuracy and arm strength of a guy like Steve Young or Aaron Rodgers. And Justin Herbert has it. He's got arm strength. Completed 3 of 4 passes of 30 yards or more against the Browns. And he's got touch. He had 3 touchdown passes on play action in short field situations. So he's got both of it going on. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him live.
Yeah, I think both of these young quarterbacks certainly have it. ESPN NFL reporter Sal Palantonio joining Amber Wilson and Joe Fortenbaugh filling in for the guys. Hey, Sal, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Washington football team has been in the news for everything except for their play on the field this season. We discuss coming up next. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson and Joe Fortenbaugh filling in on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet is hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free vet pet coverage. Visit progressive.com. So there are more emails that have been released and more of a mess for the Washington football team. And I don't mean their defense, because that's also kind of a mess this season, Joe. But according to the New York Times, for nearly a decade, the president of the Washington football team sent emails to Jeff Pasch, who was the longtime general counsel of the NFL and Roger Goodell's top advisor, in which he casually joked about Native Americans and racial and political diversity, griped about referees and league initiatives to improve player safety, arranged tickets and perks for his correspondent. He also thanked Pasch in one of the emails for getting a fine lifted and for understanding the team's thorniest troubles. I mean, these emails basically overall, they're providing a picture here of a very chummy relationship between a team executive and an NFL executive. And I, for one, am not surprised that there'd be a chummy relationship within the NFL, because, I mean, even with these two, you know, Pasch joined the league in 97. That intersects with Allen, who was a longtime Raiders and Bucks executive before he landed in Washington. It's a small community there in the NFL. You could see how some of those personal friendships would be formed. And by these emails, it seems pretty obvious that this is a friendship here. But of course, when you're talking about league executives that are tasked with overseeing investigations into teams, this seems problematic, some of these personal relationships.
Yeah, you think? So there's so much to try to slice with this stuff. Number one, where are we in the leak process? I think that's a legitimate question, because is this like the tip of the iceberg? It's only been about a week.
Like,
so is this the tip of the iceberg where it's Gruden, and then it becomes the NFL lawyers, and then it's just going to become new target after new target after new target? Or is this it? It's all being dumped in 1 week and then we can all move on. So I'd say brace yourselves, because it feels like in 650,000 emails, we're probably just getting started here.
Well, and we don't know where the leak is. I mean, there was a lot of theories when it was Gruden, and Gruden is, you know, saying some not so great things about Goodell. And there's some theories there of where some of those leaks might be coming from. Of course, the NFL vehemently denying that. It gets more murky here. You know, like, what would be the motivation for leaking these if you're the NFL? So I don't know where these leaks come from. It feels like the tip of the iceberg, though. It really does.
Also, why is it an investigation into Daniel Snyder is taking down everyone but Daniel Snyder? How is it that
Let's not forget that.
By the way, there's nothing in here from Daniel Snyder, but here, take a look at all of these other people who are wrapped up in deceptive plots and saying things they shouldn't be saying, rude, outlandish, out of line, offensive. And it's like, yeah, that stuff's really bad. But wait a minute, are you just trying to distract me from the subject of all of this? Because I'm figuring something has to be there, but who knows? Ultimately, the relationship between the league. Look, we probably want to believe that the teams, the owners, the front office personnel, the league, they all operate on a certain level playing field, that they all follow the rules, that they all do what they're supposed to do, right? But we also want to believe that with our government. We want to believe our politicians are representing our best interests. And the reality is, it's a bunch of powerful people in an old boys network where they're probably doing favors for each other when they get the opportunity, very chummy. And they're in a situation where, you know, they probably didn't think their emails were ever going to come out. You can get lazy and complacent with stuff like that. So I don't know what to make of it. I want to say, on one hand, if you're legal counsel, you should be operating in a bit more of a professional and official capacity than some of this stuff we're reading, but I don't even know what to believe anymore with so much of this stuff.
650,000 emails, we know, were gathered during the league's investigation into workplace misconduct in Washington. Obviously, only a handful of those leaks so far. We don't know if we're ever going to end up seeing more. I was surprised. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I was surprised that a lawyer was involved, I suppose. Again, though, I understand the sort of chummy relationships that can develop, and this is an in-house lawyer. I mean, this is general counsel to the NFL, and these executives there apparently paths had crossed, and so they have a personal relationship, it seems like. But even with a lawyer, I guess as a lawyer, I am wholly aware of that your personal, quote unquote, air quotes, communications that you have in writing might not be so personal when lawsuits and subpoenas get involved. And you should definitely always mind what you put in writing because of that. I mean, we see it all the time, just in the type of law that I practice, Joe, and family law. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we subpoena. Emails are one of the easiest communications to get our hands on. And I, you know, all sorts of DMs, WhatsApps, all sorts of stuff that y'all think may never see the light of day can often see the light of day. So you have to be careful, of course.
What about Telegram and all that other stuff? You guys get your hands on all that?
I mean, you don't. It depends on, obviously, the parameters, but you certainly try. Ooh. And there are ways. And then, of course, the tech companies obviously have something to say about that as well, trying to protect their interests. But yes, these sorts of subpoenas do go out and these sorts of things do end up happening. But when you're talking about these inter-workplace emails, I mean, of course, these would come up in an investigation. This was not the only Washington football team issue. Real quick, I know we're up against the clock, but of course, team president Jason Wright, he issued an apology 12 hours after announcing Sean Taylor's jersey retirement, which is going to take place this Sunday. Fans were really upset about this because they only had a few days notice of this. There's been some conflicting reports about, you know, whether when this was actually set in motion. It looks bad. The initial optics, Joe, looked bad because you have this other issue now with the Washington football team, and it kind of looked like, well, are they using Sean Taylor's passing to try to divert attention from that? It seems like that wasn't the case, but that was the appearance of it.
It's one of two things. Either you tried to deceive people by, at the last minute, deciding we're going to honor Sean Taylor, let's get people to stop looking at all this negative stuff. So on one hand, you're trying to pull a little sleight of hand on everybody. Or number two, it's just complete incompetence, where it's like, hey, by the way, everyone, I got a great idea. How about in 3 days, we go ahead and honor Sean Taylor? Let's not market it in our season ticket packages. Let's not make a big deal out of one of the greatest and most beloved Washington football players of all time. Let's just kind of shotgun it together at the last minute. It's one of the two. It's either incompetence or it's deceptive. Either way, that's not the look you want to portray as an organization.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Wright, the president of the team, of course, he said that we plan to do this right. We screwed up the execution. And as a result, we realized that we hurt many of our fans deeply. And for that, I and we as an organization are sorry. I mean, certainly, I would say that the execution is certainly in doubt here. Even if they did have this plan in the works, it seems strange that they wouldn't have deviated from the plan when they kind of realized that that would be the optics of how it would look this week.
What execution? If this was your plan in the summer, send out a tweet.
Is that a singular tweet, and then
everyone will know when it is.
Not to play devil's advocate here, and again, you know, up against the clock, but like, is it possible that they wanted to surprise their fans, you know, by remembering Sean Taylor and doing it alumni weekend? Because, of course, that seems like an appropriate weekend to do
perhaps,
it, and inviting
the
alumni
is,
back.
You want to market the hell out of these things to get people in the stands, to get people talking, to get people buying parking and souvenirs and all that other stuff. Probably have a commemorative Sean Taylor jersey that people can purchase as well.
Well, it's long overdue that they retire his jersey there in Washington. We have a great slate of NFL games this weekend. We'll tell you which teams should be on upset alert. We'll do that after this word, though, from 5-Hour Energy. Did you hit the productivity wall after a big lunch today? Well, let 5-Hour Energy Shots help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. Go to 5hourenergy.com today to find over 15 flavors to choose from, with flavors like watermelon and tropical burst, cherry, peach, mango, and plenty more. There is a flavor for everyone. But if you are out and about, remember, you can always pick up a 5-Hour Energy Shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, Joe Fortenbaugh, hanging out, filling in for the guys on ESPN Radio. If you like money, listen up. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Joe Fortenbaugh. We are filling in for the guys. And Joe is on the Daily Wager. He is one of our betting guys here at ESPN, one of the best in the business at doing it. So he's going to try to help you here with some upset alerts that we're going to get to. So listen up if you want some help this week in week 6 of the NFL. Let's jump right into things with game 1.
Kansas City at Washington.
We were just talking about the Washington football team last segment for very different reasons. Let's go ahead and actually talk about some football. The Chiefs, 2-3. Joe, the defense has allowed over 29 points in all five games this season. I mean, is it time to panic for Kansas City? This is two of the worst defenses in the entire NFL in a matchup this weekend. What do we do here? Is this an upset alert?
So this is a lot of points to lay on the road when your defense can't stop anybody. Kansas City opened as a 7-point favorite. It has since been moved down to 6.5, so there's a little bit of Washington money that has moved it off the key number of 7 to 6.5. Ultimately, people and the public are going to want to get involved in the Chiefs. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's a high-flying offense. Just remember, the Chiefs have only covered the spread in 3 of their last 16 games going back to last season. 3-13 over their last 16 games against the spread. As for Washington, we were sold a fake bill of goods. They were supposed to be good on defense. They've been absolutely terrible. If you're looking at anything here, I'd look to Kansas City's team total over. The only bet you have to make is how many points Kansas City will score in this game. I would bet over that amount. I think they'll hang plenty. The problem is their defense and whether or not they'll be able to stop Washington. You don't even have to worry about that in this game. Kansas City team total over.
Next game.
Packers at Bears.
The Packers, Joe, have beaten the Bears in all but 3 of their last 20 encounters. They hold a 101-95-6 all-time record over Chicago. These rivals doesn't normally go well for Chicago. I don't know if there's an argument to be made here. I mean, the Packers, you know, they're coming off of a hard-fought OT win against Cincy. Maybe they'll be a little tired. Justin Fields, it looks like Chicago found their quarterback of the future. Is this the time? Can the Bears do it at Soldier against the Packers?
It has been nothing but Green Bay money. This spread was as low as Green Bay -4. It is now up to 6 as the money continues to come in on the Packers, and for good reason. They're 20-7 against the spread in their last 27 games against the Bears. In their last 22 trips to Soldier Field, they're 17-5 against the spread. They not only beat up on the Bears, they cover the spread against the Bears on a regular basis. Now, Chicago, that was a nice win last weekend against the Raiders, but let's not mince words here. 30th in the NFL in scoring, 32nd in yards per play. I'm not sure I would lay the 6 with Green Bay. I'm not going to advise you to take the 6 with Chicago. I would look to the under of 44 points here. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think that's the way you attack this NFC North showdown.
My favorite radio conversation leading up to this week is, you know, is this the passing of the baton in the NFC North? Aaron Rodgers on his
sure.
way. Justin Fields on his wing. And can he take it from Aaron Rodgers? I'm like, everyone pump the brakes. Pretty sure Aaron's still playing pretty darn well. Next game.
Cardinals at Browns.
We talked about these two teams earlier in the show. Obviously, the Browns coming off of a heartbreaking shootout against the Chargers last week. The Cardinals, the only undefeated team in the NFL, so things don't get easier here for the Cleveland Browns. Is this an upset alert, though?
A lot to sort through here, all right? So Arizona comes in undefeated. This was Cleveland -3. It got up to Cleveland -3.5, which is a significant move when you're talking about moving off the key number of 3, right? More games end on a differential of 3 than any other differential. 24-21, 31-28, you get where I'm going here. So you want to be on the right side at 3. Well, the Nick Chubb news just surfaced. He will not play for the Browns this weekend, and the line went back down to 3. But remember something. Arizona is battling some COVID issues on the team. Chandler Jones, their top pass rusher, may not play this weekend. Kyler Murray's a bit dinged up. Arizona, this is a letdown spot, in my opinion. You're 5-0. You're off back-to-back huge wins against divisional opponents in the Rams and the Niners. Now you're traveling across the country to play a non-conference opponent in the Browns. Keep something in mind. Kevin Stefanski, the head coach of the Browns, is 6-0 in his career when coming off a loss. He has never lost back-to-back games as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I would lay the 3 here. I am not putting the Browns on upset alert. I like them to win this game and cover the spread.
Next game.
Chargers and Ravens.
The Chargers and the Ravens. Can we talk about some young, amazing quarterbacks, Joe Fortenbaugh? It doesn't get better than this matchup. I think this weekend, at least from the quarterback perspective, I think we're all amazed right now at what's happening here with Justin Herbert and Lamar Jackson. I think that this could be the MVP race, but is there an upset alert to be had?
100%. Ravens were a 3-point favorite. Money's come in on the Chargers. It has knocked it down to 2.5. I think you could play the Chargers on the money line here at plus 125, essentially just betting them to win the game outright. And what plus 125 means, for every $100 you risk, you will return $125 in profit. The Ravens are 4-1. They've won 4 games in a row since they lost to the Raiders. But you can make the case that they could very easily be 1-4. The Raider loss, week 2, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't fumble that ball at the end of the game, Kansas City wins. Week 3, if Justin Tucker doesn't hit a 66-yard NFL record game-winning field goal at the buzzer in Detroit, the Lions win that game. And last week against the Colts, if the Indianapolis squad doesn't blow a 19-point lead with 16 minutes to go, the Colts win that game. So the Ravens are real close to 1-4, in my opinion. Chargers are very well balanced. Great quarterback play out of Justin Herbert. I think the Chargers win this game outright.
Tune in to Football Action Sunday as Lamar and the Ravens host Herbert and the Chargers. Coverage begins at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app.
Cowboys at Patriots.
Joe, the last time Dak Prescott faced the Patriots was in 2019, also at Gillette, when his offense managed just 9 points in a loss that saw him throw no touchdowns and 1 interception. Both Dak and Ezekiel Elliott, I think they would like to have that one back. They would like nothing more than to punch the Patriots in the mouth in this one and make a statement, but is it going to happen?
That game was in the pouring rain, and Jason Garrett, I remember, was settling for a field goal late. It had taken all day to get into the red zone. He needed 2 scores. He kicks a field goal. I don't even know if they made it, but they never got the ball back, and they ended up losing that game. Classic Garrett mismanagement of your situation at the end of a game. So Dallas on the look-ahead line, which is a point spread that comes out more than a week in advance for each game, was -1. Then the Cowboys beat up on the Giants, which was predictable, but the Patriots didn't look impressive against Houston. And as a result, this point spread came back out at Dallas -4. I think that was a big over-adjustment. Since then, we've seen New England money. It's down to 3.5. Some shops have 3. I would play the Patriots plus the points here. I think Dallas is very, very good on offense. That's not a surprise. Defensively, they've taken steps in the right direction. But when it comes down to it, Mike McCarthy versus Bill Belichick, my vote's going to go with Belichick. I think this could be just like what we saw in the Buccaneers game. You have a very tightly contested matchup that comes down to the final few minutes of the game. And in that situation, I'm going to want 3.5 points in my pocket. Give me the Patriots plus the points.
Speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, we know they're good. Are they Super Bowl good, though? We'll check in on all that's happening in the NFC East. This is Canty and Golic Jr. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Joe Fortenbaugh filling in for the guys on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. Maybe America's team, but can they win it all? This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Joe Fortenbaugh. Canty and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. Now, we talked about the Dallas Cowboys a little bit last segment, but I really want to dive into things here, Joe, because obviously the Cowboys, I mean, they're that team. Listen, they're America's team, right? Or so they say. So they get all the attention, and often there's tons of hype, and then, you know, they go 8-8, and we know how these things normally pan out. This season, however, they're 4-1. Their only loss so far is to the defending Super Bowl champ, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So if there's a good loss, so to speak, that would be one of them. And they look like the real deal after paying Dak Prescott. Are the Dallas Cowboys a legitimate contender here?
Absolutely. And it starts with the fact that they are the beneficiaries of playing in the worst division in the National Football League. Who's going to threaten them for a playoff spot, right? The easiest way to get into the postseason is to win your division. And when Philadelphia stinks, and the Giants stink, and Washington stinks, guess what? You don't even have to be all that good, as we learned last year with the Washington football team. You just need to be good enough, and that gets you in. So that leads to your question. Once you get into the playoffs, are you good enough to contend with the rest of the NFC? Well, that leads into a question of how elite you need to be on both sides of the ball in order to make a deep run. Because offensively, they look like they're the real deal. Dak Prescott doesn't look like that injury slowed him down at all. He's got weapons for days in CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott. The backfield's deep. Every which way you look, they can score points. They're hanging, what, 35 a game right now, it looks like, on everybody. They can score. And they got a marquee win over the Chargers on the road to boot, because it turns out that Chargers outfit is pretty solid. So what's going to happen with the defense? They are improved from last year, but they are not greatly improved from last year. They were absolutely abysmal in terms of stopping people last season. And this year they're 28th in opponent yards per play, which is not good. But Amber, how great do you need to be? We've seen it with Kansas City. An elite offense and a somewhat average defense that finds a way to get a stop every now and again can get you into a Super Bowl. Hell, it can even win it. But is this defense good enough to do that for Dallas, in your opinion?
Well, I would say yes, and surprisingly yes, because the defense, I think, was the real big question mark coming into this season. We knew how good that offense could be if, in fact, they were healthy. Obviously, there was some injury question marks there, but we knew that if Dak was back to full strength and if Ezekiel Elliott has looked like he's looked the last four games, I think it surprises nobody that offensively they'd have the production that they have had. Defensively, I think that's really where the questions were coming into the season with the Cowboys. So I would say yes, and I would say surprisingly so, because for me anyways, that defense has played much better than maybe I even anticipated that they would.
And I think that you're speaking for a lot of people there as well, because last season they weren't bad. They were like Kansas City bad last year. Like what you're seeing from the Chiefs this year, where you can't stop anybody, that was the Dallas Cowboys. Now you go through the schedule this year, you lose a tight one to the Buccaneers. There's no shame in that. It was the opener for the season. You were on the road. Tampa Bay's the defending champs. You had a chance to win it. That's all you can ask for. You beat the Chargers, which is marquee. And then you beat up on the Eagles, Panthers, and Giants, which is eh. But you can only beat who's in front of you. And right now they're 4-1. What I want to see is continued improvement from the defense, which is what they've been showing. And then I want to see how Mike McCarthy handles a very tight late game situation. Because McCarthy tried to take him out of that Chargers game, and he took him out of that Buccaneers game. And that's been his thing. I remember the big joke was when he was coming to Dallas, he had been studying analytics. He was a new coach. And then he got there and he demonstrated he didn't know anything about clock management, end of game strategy, any of that stuff. Ultimately, you are going to have a game between now and if you make it to the Super Bowl, that's going to come down to in-game strategy and crucial decision-making in high-leverage situations. And if McCarthy is able to improve in that department and make the necessary calls that need to be made in those spots, Dallas has a chance to go all the way. But if he can't do that, if he's still sloppy with his timeouts, if he still is lazy with how he goes about some of these late game situations, Dallas is only going to go as far as he can take them, and that at best is going to be maybe one playoff win.
You know, Kellen Moore, obviously, he's a well-respected coach, and he's quickly climbing through the coaching ranks in the NFL. People are calling this, though, his marquee matchup. Like, this is his toughest challenge to date, people are saying, because, of course, you're being pitted against Bill Belichick. Do you think that that's true? Like, does Belichick's offense still hold that kind of candor here in 2021?
The thing, I don't want to go too far with it. I was saying it a little bit going into the game against Tampa Bay, but I mean, honestly, how good are the Patriots, right?
How good are they? I mean, they're not.
I mean, they've done nothing since Brady left. Now, I understand last year, if you want to chalk that one up, sure. But what have they done this season? They almost got beat by Houston last week.
I mean, they have
all we ever hear about is Belichick versus rookie quarterbacks. Belichick here, Belichick there, Belichick off a loss. And ultimately this season, I mean, you know, I was told he had plenty to work with. Now I'm being told the team isn't as good. Maybe his decision-making isn't as great. I don't know. I mean, this week you go in, you can win that game if you're Dallas. It would be a nice statement for them. It's obviously something you want to put
though
on the mantle.
But like, yeah, that's my point. Is it still a statement? Because you were referencing the games that they've won this season. They have one really good win against the Chargers. So is this the win then versus the New England Patriots this season, where people go, okay, yeah, for sure the Dallas Cowboys are for real. Like, we're talking Super Bowl now.
The Chargers are better than the Patriots. That was a better win for Dallas, but this would be better for McCarthy to go into this situation and be able to hang with Belichick. He doesn't have to outcoach Belichick because he's got a better team. He just needs to hang with Belichick. And if he can go get this win on the road, non-conference opponent, marquee situation, that's going to go a long way for him down the line.
I do think that that Patriots reputation is going to mean that these matchups for at least the next couple years are considered marquee matchups, even if none of us believe that the Patriots are as good this season as we expected them to be coming off of all those free agent moves and the opt-outs coming back in. A lot of people obviously thinking the Patriots were going to be much better than they are. There is college football that is going to get played this weekend. We'll discuss next. Amber Wilson, Joe Fortenbaugh filling in.